And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just turning 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday. It's the 4th of December, 2025. Very good morning to you. I hope you're all very well indeed. Great to have you on board for the 9 till noon show and sticking with us here in Highland Radio as you do. We've got lots coming up over the next 3 hours. We're going to be touching on hopefully all of the topics that matter to you, the stories that are interesting you that are out and about there at the moment. We love your views and your comments. We look forward to platforming them and catching up on any that we didn't quite get to over the last couple of days. And of course, conversations that matter to you with the people of the Northwest and beyond. Right, get in touch with us. We love your interactions, as I mentioned. WhatsApps and your texts, 086 60 25000. You can give us a call too, if that's your preferred course of communication, 074 91 25000. As always, Caroline Orr taking your calls, assisted by Shannon on the show. And we also have the email address for your comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to join us watching on the live stream, as we've a loyal band of a few hundred, up over 1,000 at times across the various platforms, it's great to have you on board consuming the show that way as well. We love your comments there. We pick them up and include them in the programme as well. Lots of papers out on a Thursday morning, as you can imagine. The Finn Valley Voice this morning: councillors discuss upgrades to pedestrian crossings in Twin Towns. Lifford Stranorler, I'll read the big writing actually, because it's a printed off version just at the moment. Lifford Stranorler MD councillors raised the issue of plans to change 8 pedestrian crossings across Ballybuffet and Stranorler at their MD meeting on Tuesday. It follows an incident on Wednesday last when a pedestrian sustained non-life-threatening injuries after being struck by a car at the crossing outside the Bank of Ireland Ballybuffet. We covered this on the show yesterday, and there's detailed coverage of it as well in that paper today, as well as all the other news and information of importance to the Finn Valley area. The Derry People, Donegal News. The chairman of the newly formed Local Community Safety Partnership in Donegal has accused the Minister for Justice of using a band-aid plaster approach to addressing criminality. Councillor Jerry McMonagall was speaking to the Donegal News this week as it was learned more than 100 Gardaí to get tasers in a pilot project. Under the plan, tasers will be issued to 128 frontline uniformed Gardaí. But Councillor McMonagall said that while he fully supports the need for Gardaí to be able to protect themselves, he believes the move does nothing to address the wider problem of a depleting Garda force. On to the Tyrconnell Tribune today, and a ruling by the European Court of Justice has found that Ireland has committed 14 breaches of the EU's Water Framework Directive. The court has now raised issues with the government about how water charges are structured and the state's adherence to the EU principle of cost recovery for services, with Ireland's exemption 2.5 times more than other EU countries. Farming sources said this ruling creates a real fear of more widespread water charges above 10,000 litres per day, and homeowners may also fall within the regulations. The ECJ said that documents submitted by the Republic do not explain how the country's water pricing policy encourages users to make efficient use of water resources. Much more detailed coverage of that story on the front of the paper. John carrying the changes to Highland schedules. John and the team, by the way, and all your news in that paper today. The Derry News this morning. An outline planning application for Derry's Fort George site has been submitted by the Department for Communities. The department has submitted the proposal for application notice in relation to an application for outline planning for the Strand Road site. I have to pick this paper up off the floor that I dropped because I won't be able to concentrate until I do, so give me a moment.
There you go.
Right, now, everything's in order. On to the Irish Independent, and almost 200 adult asylum seekers were placed in Tusla Children's Accommodation over the last 3 years before it was learned they were over 18. The number of immigrants who applied for international protection as minors but were subsequently deemed ineligible because of their age has more than doubled since 2023. The biggest opposition party has now called for a more robust system to protect children in state accommodation, while a government TD has criticised contradictory accounts over which agencies is responsible for age verification. This is a complicated one, right? Because I don't want to be insensitive or what have you. But There's been a couple of high-profile missing persons cases involving people that have recently arrived into this country, and there was a couple of them where their photos were issued and comments ended up having to be switched off because it was pretty evident that the person was well in excess of 18, although their age was described as 15 or 16 or whatever it might be. So that's one element of it. You know, I suppose if you are moving to another country and you're conscious of, you know, what benefits might be available and you're doing the best for your family, right, and maybe people don't have documentation. If you say someone's 20, who's 20 is 16 or 17, I presume there's additional allowances. I'm not saying that is widespread, but I presume it would happen because I'm sure, you know, if you could do it, you would. But also, though, there is this problem then, which is the greater problem, is that you are placing adults potentially in the same space as vulnerable children. And that's what would be of real concern to me. Only last month, it was revealed that the male charged with the murder of Ukrainian Vadim Davidenko, 17, in October at a Tuzla facility for separated minors seeking international protection is now believed to have been an adult. Figures released by Sinn Féin TD McCarthy shows that in the last 3 years, 192 separated children seeking international protection have been deemed eligible because they were over 18 or ineligible. So that's a problem. That's a big number. That is a serious issue on a number of levels, not least, actually, and most importantly, I think, the safety of young people. Let me see. The new planning laws are coming into place. Well, they're not new planning laws. They're efforts to speed up the delivery of large infrastructure. And people who object to infrastructure projects could be offered damages rather than allow judicial reviews to delay a project under a new plan. That sounds like paying people off legally. Is that not going to encourage more? That's a peculiar one. It's one of the points that are in it. So rather than take a judicial review, you'd be paid off. But if your intention was sound, you couldn't be paid off, surely, could you? I mean, that sounds like legalised payoffs. But anyway, the government yesterday unveiled its plan for speeding up the delivery of large projects amid concerns that Ireland's infrastructure won't be able to keep up with economic and population growth. The Accelerating Infrastructure Report is highly critical of the impact of political reviews, and it claimed that virtually every planning decision relating to critical infrastructure is subject to judicial review. A judicial review is a form of legal challenge where the High Court considers decisions by lower courts, tribunals, and other administrative bodies to ensure decisions are reached properly, fairly, and legally. The review, which is separate to the planning process and comes after planning is granted or denied, assesses the legal validity, not the merits of the decision. So, as I say, one of the solutions is to pay people off there. Just a development in the Enoch Burke story, which I know quite a number of you follow, and it's in the Irish Daily Mail. Enoch Burke will not be allowed out of Mountjoy Prison for Christmas, Easter or the next summer holidays unless he agrees to stay away from his former school, a High Court judge has vowed. Mr. Burke is currently in prison for the fourth time for failing to abide by a court order not to trespass at Wilson's Hospital School. He was brought back to court yesterday in handcuffs by prison guards and again refused to purge his contempt. Judge Brian Cregan noted that on previous occasions, Mr. Burke had been allowed out of prison for Christmas. However, he said that no such special dispensation would be made this time. Although he repeated that Mr. Burke can walk free at any time he chooses if he agrees to obey the court order. Now, I'm at the point now where I would say this to Enoch Burke and his family, and particularly his family and those around him, this is just my two cents, that he's made his point. Everybody knows that he is very devout in his religion and in his beliefs. And he's flogging a dead horse now with this school. He will never return to that school to work, no matter what. Nothing will ever get him back in those doors to teach. And he will struggle to teach anywhere through an interview process. He has an opportunity to step back from this now, to make a statement whereby he reinforces his views, whether you agree with them or not. And if he wants to use that platform that he clearly has now, he can do so to perhaps in a more effective way get his point across. Like, there's no point to what he's doing at this point anymore. And it's very easy for maybe people to say, well, fair play, Enoch, and sit, you know, drinking a cup of tea and having a slice of toast and the freedom to walk out of the house. But at the end of the day, you know, if you actually really care about the guy, you'd be encouraging him to, you know, he doesn't have to back down from his views at all. You'd be encouraging his family to sort of say, right, you know, the point has now been made to the point where it can't be made any further. But anyway, that's that. The Irish Farmers Journal. The island of Ireland is on high alert for blue tongue after two cases of the disease were confirmed on Wednesday. 44 more cases are being investigated. Wow, okay. Hopefully those investigations prove negative. Northern Ireland's Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs has ramped up its blue tongue surveillance testing of livestock around a farm in Bangor, County Down, where two cows tested positive. The two cows were not imported, and DAERA maintains that at this stage it's too early to tell how the virus entered Northern Ireland. But we heard from an expert earlier in the week, which I hadn't considered, that it may well have, because these are transmitted by biting midges or from cow to calf. That's the only way it spreads, as far as I was able to determine, that maybe these midges or these biting insects came in feed, in hay or whatever it might be. But hopefully that means it could be contained because of the weather, right? You know, it's not fantastic weather for those types of animals. We covered this, of course, on the news, but just to mention it out of the newspapers this morning, in case anyone missed it, Gardaí have arrested a second suspect in connection with the crime gang attack, which left a young farmer fighting for his life. The man, who's in his 40s, was arrested on Monday as part of the probe into the assault on Charles Duher in Lifford in January. The 26-year-old suffered life-changing injuries in the attack on him and his father, which was so serious that Gardaí reclassified it as attempted murder. And in fairness, it was, I think, the family that were very keen to see that reclassification. Investigators believe they were attacked by a Derry-based crime gang. Mr. Duher was airlifted to the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast, while Dad Charles Sr., who's in his 60s, was less seriously injured. A 5-strong gang of masked men burst into the family home in Conyborough Road and beat both men around the head and body in what started off as an aggravated burglary, they say, and ended up an attempt to kill. So that's the framing. That's the framing from the paper there. And finally, let's go to the Sun. And this is really quite remarkable, because this is, I consider this to be really big news, but I could only find it in one paper. Maybe it was in the papers yesterday and I missed it. And it's a tiny, tiny little segment here. And it's in the Sun, of all papers. And it says, a record $10 billion in corporation tax was collected by the Exchequer last month. $10 billion in 1 month. The total was more than the state used to collect an entire year just a decade ago. So €10 billion in corporation tax. Now, I know we're told that that money should be used a certain way, that you know, that it's rainy day it, spend it on capital projects, blah, 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 right? But €10 billion, I'm just double checking, it's not million, right? It's €10 billion in a month. So that's 1 month of money that the government wasn't expecting to receive. So just to put that into context, if you don't mind, because I looked at it and I found it in the paper and I was like, what? Right, so what would $10 billion do? So last year, and it's not happening this year, remember the cost of living packages? It was for every household to try and help with the sudden increase in prices. So what was included in it? This is just some of it. It was a budget on top of a budget, effectively. All of those extensive series of one-off social welfare payments, that was included, right? Two double child benefit payments. This is for every qualifying family in the country. And then those energy credits worth hundreds of euros added to customers' electricity bills. That was regardless of income. So that was all that for everyone, not targeted. You could do that five times for five consecutive years or five consecutive months for the entire country, based off 1 month's income of corporation tax that the government really didn't know was coming. So that's five of those. You could repair, at the highest level of the cap, 28,000 defective blockhouses. So that's what that 1 month of revenue income could build over, in fact. It's about 28,500 defective blockhouses. Again, let me just reiterate, that's with one billion euro collected in tax by the Exchequer in 1 month. The TEN-T project could be done 10 times over. So that's the bypass of Ballybofey-Stranraer, that bridge, the extension out towards the border. You could do that 10 times with 1 month's Exchequer income. You could employ for 1 year, right? And you can piece this out as much as you like. With one month's Exchequer income, 22,000 nurses for a year. It's the annual salary of 22,000 nurses. I hope I haven't got my figures wrong on this. 22,000 nurses. You could employ 100,000 CALMS clinical psychologists for a year with this 10 billion in 1 month. The annual salaries of 100,000 CALMS clinical psychologists. Everyone's talking about the cost of the children's hospital. Even with the overruns, you could build four of them. You build four of those children's hospitals, right? And I'll tell you another thing. For every child that's in poverty in this country, for every child that's in poverty, you could give them 45 grand or give their family 45 grand. That's how much tax. And as I say, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a politician. Those are the figures that I scribbled on the back of a piece of paper there. But for the tax it take for 1 month this year, 1 month, 45 grand for every child in poverty in this country, five children's hospitals, 100,000 CALMS clinical psychologists employed for a year. You could employ for a year 22,000 nurses, 22,000 nurses. You could do that 10T project 10 times over. So you could have 10 bridges across the Swilly, 10 bypasses of Ballybofey-Stranraer, and 10 roads out to the border. You could fix 28,500 defective concrete block homes with 1 month's tax and 5 years of last year's cost of living package. And tell me that we are handling the money correctly. Or maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, correct me. If I'm wrong, I'm open to correction. It's not an opinion. Everything I've done there is stated as fact. That's 1 month's corporation tax take. Really quite bizarre, isn't it? Welcome on to the programme, Brendan Byrne, CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association. Good morning to you, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you on the show. We talk regularly to you and other representatives from the fishing industry. And I think a lot of the, you know, the big issues are well talked about on this show, at least anyway. But you had an opportunity to sit down, didn't you, with the Taoiseach, the person at the top. How would you frame the meeting?
The meeting was very positive. It was constructive. It was very comprehensive. And it was inclusive of all of the fishing industry and processing sectors, from inshore to the islands, to the cooperatives, to the POs, and ourselves as processors. It was an initiative off on Taoiseach to have a round table meeting with all of industry. Such is the scale of impact and challenge that we're facing post the cuts recommended by science and indeed the Brexit. We're facing an economic Armageddon, as I said previously, here on that island. It's going to directly impact the coastal communities. It has the potential to impact up to 17,000 jobs. So it warranted the intervention of the Taoiseach and all of government. We also had Minister Martin Hayden there, along with Timmy Dooley.
In relation to the scientific advice and the impact it might have on quotas for Ireland, what are the headlines there?
The headlines are very stark. The loss to the catching sector is about 94 million euros. The potential loss to the sector that I represent is 200 million. 200 million. Are up to a third of the overall value of the processing sector in Ireland. And any sector that has that degree of contraction in, say, a 12-month period needs a national framework of support. And that was the purpose of the meeting. And the Taoiseach and the government of the day have now committed to setting up a national framework for financial assistance for the catching and processing sector, including all sectors. And that framework would last for 5 years. Such is the scale and the gravity of the situation that we're now facing.
But does that not just buy time? That doesn't get to the core issues here. This is like paying people to tie their boats up, is it not?
No, it mightn't necessarily be that, but what it is it's the government of the day saying the fishing industry is worth saving, similar to what we did to the beef industry, similar to what we did to the grain industry. This is the first time any government in the history of this state has said, yes, we will support the fishing industry. This is unprecedented. But the industry are resilient. The fishing industry are resilient. And traditionally, we have always traded our way out of downturns. But the scale of what has been foisted on us by combination of Brexit and combination of the scientific advice by gross overfishing.
Yeah, but see, that's what I was going to say, and this is why I was saying about buying time. You know, I mean, we the decision was made for us, even though we're part of a union as it relates to Brexit. It's the European Union of which we are a part that facilitates or encourages or permits the Wild West fishing of our waters or waters off our coasts. And that is what's led to a situation whereby the scientific advice is leading to cuts right across the sector, right? So, again, I understand the framework recognises the importance of the industry and supports that for 5 years, but it doesn't get to the nub of it. I'm keen to hear his views on the overfishing, on the fact that we always seem to get the short end of the stick.
We must break this into two separate issues, and you're correct in your analysis, by the way, but the two issues are here. In terms of scientific advice for mackerel stocks or any whitefish stock, mackerel stocks, however bad, they are down as a result of overfishing of those other third countries. It can recover in 2 to 3, 3 to 5 years. So we cannot give up on an industry that employs 17,000 people due to the actions of Norwegians.
Nor should we
have to protect our own industry.
Nor should we, Brendan. But we're stopping fishing. I don't know what percentage of an impact we're actually having on the stocks. If we don't, this could just mean that the third countries feel that they've got more to plunder. Do you understand? So I understand that these stocks could recover in 3 years and the industry is resilient and will be there in 3 years with the government support. But unless there's action taken to stop the overfishing, the core issue here, how will those stocks recover over those 3 years?
Well, international opinion is the best lever that we have on Norway and Iceland and the Faroes. And that is a consumer-driven market. And I think in the fullness of time, those countries will have to pull back because the consumer, the purchaser of fish, has become very sustainability conscious. And Ireland are the most compliant country in Europe, the top two in compliance for regulation. And we've talked about that time in and time out. So look, we can only control what's within our jurisdiction. And what is critical here is the government of the day have signed up to a five-year framework to keep this industry intact, to keep the jobs where possible intact. That is what we need to do. Other arguments with Norway and Iceland are going to be fought in a much bigger arena. We've made our views abundantly clear. Other countries in Europe are more, I suppose, conflated because of business interests that overlap into Norway and that. But we won't stop the campaign, nor will the government of the day stop.
But I have you in front of me, so I'm not trying to sort of... but it sounds to me like a bit of a spin. This sounds more to me like the can being kicked down the road than an actual solution, because whilst what we have control of, there seems some certainty with this framework agreement, the actual root cause of the problem... we're still sort of, it's more aspirational and a wish and a hope that all of a sudden the EU starts cracking down on third countries plundering our waters. And I don't think they're going to do that.
Greg, every morning I get up, the sector that I'm the spokesperson for, my main priority is to safeguard the 4,000 jobs that are in processing. Whether you're in Atlin Fish in Carndonagh or any one of the 8 fish factories in Killybegs, my priority is to make sure the people that work in those factories or the people that supply those factories have a factory that's functioning. Yesterday was the framework that I desperately needed to give that security, that surety, and that guarantee that in 5 years' time, when science will change, and science will change, and maybe the policy of overfishing of Norway will change, but we need to be there and in the game in order to safeguard these jobs.
For sure. And that is what that framework does. That is critical, and I recognise that, and I'm not in any way trying to dilute the win here because these are people's lives. This is people's industry. I probably shouldn't be looking at the bigger picture one day off, right? It's just, I know, say, for instance, with the cost of living packages the government introduced, all of a sudden they very much don't want them to become part of, you know, the budget, so to speak. And I just hope we're not on a cliff edge in 5 years.
Nor am I criticising you, but I'm coming from a backdrop and I'm only 5 years in the fishing industry. But in my lifetime, I've seen different sectors of the economy supported by financial frameworks.
Yeah.
This is the first time that we've secured one for the fishing industry.
Yeah.
Because for too long, the fishing industry, as you and I have debated year in and year out, have been left in the shadows and have been left without the support that any national government in any other country would have done years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where we are now. And this is only the first step, because we need to look at the whole regulatory situation and all the regulatory.
And I want to get to that, but one last thing, it's the last negative thing I say. I just hope the bureaucrats in the EU aren't looking on and saying, actually, that's not quite as an important issue anymore because the state's looking after it and our eyes will be diverted to, you know, the Mercosur deal or something along those lines. But listen, it's still a big win, right? I get that. Just one thing before we talk about regulation. Very interested in the Taoiseach's views in relation to that. The predicted losses that might be incurred, to what extent would this framework offset them?
Well, that is going to be part of the working group's remit, which I believe the working group will be set up next Wednesday. The Taoiseach was adamant that it's set up immediately and recommendations come to government as soon as possible. Look, at the scale of loss is going to be 200 million. The objective here is to safeguard every job that there is currently within the sector. That is the main priority of this. It is the main priority that all the companies are safeguarded in order to get through this downturn. That is the objective.
How does that look like, right? Because if the conveyor belts aren't running, is it about diversifying? Is it about, you know, is it supporting wages if the factory floor is inactive? Do we know, or is that part of the framework discussions?
It's all part of the framework that we safeguard the jobs. It could be wage subsidies. It could be supports directly to the factories, to the boats, to the inshore sector. That is where we are. We are here to protect the entire industry from the smallest unit to the largest unit and everything in between. That is the objective. And in regard to what it takes, it is up to this working group now to make recommendations year on, year out for a 5-year programme. And that is critical.
Okay.
That we do that.
Right. So that hopefully is dealing with the external problems with the industry. The internal ones are our interpretation, our enforcement of regulations, the same regulations, they're European wide, but they're enforced very differently in different countries. It seems to be very, and that was highlighted really with a decade long case that eventually fell. But it was a decade that a company had to endure. You can imagine the legal letters, the consultations, the cloud that would have been around it. But that's just one example of many. So, Brendan, did you get an opportunity to raise these concerns with An Taoiseach, and what was his feedback in that regard?
I did personally. Now, I didn't specifically reference the Ward case.
Understood.
But
yeah.
I spoke about the... I gave the example. To land one fish into an Irish fish factory, you need 13 sets of documents and declarations to take a fish from a boat, which could be 200 metres away from the factory, into the factory. 13 sets of documents and electronic tech. If I were to do that in Denmark, 2 documents, that's all you need. And then we wonder as a country why foreign landings are down 66%. We wonder why no one wants to bring fish to Ireland to process. You don't have to wonder. We're strangled with regulation. And it's the same regulation that applies, as you correctly said, all across Europe. That has to be part of this process. Already we have Kieran Mulvey, who has already started this process. But all of this has to be brought out into the plain daylight. And there it has to be explained why it has to be this way in Ireland, but not that way in Denmark, not that way in the Netherlands or France. If it's a
But as you say that to him, and this is your interpretation, like, does he recoil in the seat and go, well, I wonder what's going on, I must get on top of that? Is he aware of it happening?
I think a combination of everything that has brought us to a point now that there's a realization right across all the parties, and we've acknowledged the Oireachtas Fishing Committee and the opposition and the roles that they play. But there is a realization now, for too long, politicians have stood too far back from fishing. And there now is an awareness that politically hard decisions will have to be taken in the months ahead, whether that is in regard to the department or any competent authority or any regulatory authority. I think if we're here to safeguard the industry, then everything has to be on the table, and it has to be decided upon in a very short time frame.
In relation to that, obviously this has been, you know, there's an expedience here. When do you expect to sort of see some numbers in that in relation to this?
I expect the first Mulvey report to be out, if not before Christmas, immediately after Christmas. That will be part of a debate. The working group will be part of a debate. But more importantly, every elected politician now knows what exactly was happening in fishing. We quote the Ward case. What other sector of the economy would tolerate a 10-year harassment by the state?
I want to ask one more question about how we stop the Nordic countries and the Faroe Islands overfishing the waters. Is it enforcement? Is this part of a off the table deal that the EU will turn the other way? Right, because that's one thing for your layperson listening on this, right? You know, you wouldn't allow third countries to come in and rob all the grapes off the vines in the Champagne area of France, right? That would be a crime. That would be illegal. That would be an invasion, right? So what is going on that facilitates boats that aren't entitled to fish our waters to fish our waters? Is it a blind eye being turned? Is it a cozy deal? Is it indifference? What's going on? Why is it allowed?
I think the first thing is that in 2014, a very bad deal was made between the EU and Norway. Ireland was part of that. They mustn't have realised what they signed up to, because it is a disastrous deal. The second thing, and you're 100% correct in your assessment, the EU are too complicit and too weak on Norway. If it was any other country that was at what they're at for the last 10 to 15 years, particularly in the last five, where they've overfished mackerel by 1 million, it would be called out and there would be market restrictions.
But why then do we allow them to do it?
Well, the first thing is, we're not the only member of the EU. Germany are dependent on gas from Norway.
Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty.
And all that. Yeah. So there is a lot of bartering that needs to be done, but we can't give up on calling them out. Ireland has taken a deal, very militant stance here.
Because that's a deal that's being done outside the EU framework, right? Now, well, I know you're supposing what's being done, but that's a deal.
As far as I can make out, EU make a deal a minute a day, all through the day. Okay. And it's where we need to be and where we haven't been traditionally. We need to be in the heart of that. And from a fishing perspective, we need to be very robust and aggressive in defending our interests. It's something that we traditionally didn't do, and that's why we're paying a very high price on it. But you will see a change in culture in how Ireland approaches EU talks, how they approach EU deals, and that has been the objective of mine since I started in this job 5 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. I can't see us giving up our little role as being the good little boys of Europe and growing teeth on one particular issue.
You and I had one thing in common. We were never good boys.
No. And see that where that got us. All right, Slán, take care. Thank you very much indeed. Imagine why. That's Brendan Byrne there. Letterkenny Chamber and their members are expressing their concerns regarding the proposed increase in commercial rates. The council is stuck in a bit of a debate as to whether to increase them or not by 5%. Tony Forrester is CEO of Letterkenny Chamber and joins us now. Good morning to you, Tony. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
I presume the problems are quite obvious. You know, we've got the minimum wage increases, you know, greater entitlements for staff in terms of sick leave and maternity and paternity leave, and now businesses contributing to pensions in January. The price of electricity is only going in one direction, other overheads, etc. And now businesses potentially are looking at a 5% increase in commercial rates from their own local authority. There's a lot going on there for businesses.
There really is. And we're on the record for quite a long time talking about the regulatory burden for businesses, and particularly small businesses. So large companies can sometimes, you know, absorb stuff, but small businesses, and that's the majority of the businesses in Donegal, will struggle with inflation. We all know what inflation is doing at the moment, and we all know we're paying more for everything. And I think just bringing in auto enrollment, the minimum wage increase, as you say, you know, it's all happening at the same time. And then the council obviously are going up to the sort of 5% or mooting that as what they want to increase. They didn't increase the rates for a few years. And, you know, 5% seems quite a lot across the country. We understand for the councils that have done it, we have around a 3.5% average happening, although some obviously are very much higher than that. So I suppose we're just saying maybe the timing's not good. And the other thing might be, let's talk about this, and maybe let's have a conversation, a dialogue about what exactly the rates go to, why is the burden so high? You know, why are businesses kind of the people who are funding, or the organisations that are helping to fund local government? Maybe there's a bigger conversation, as well as please don't put the rates up this year.
Yeah, but that is it. I mean, you know, they're not ring-fenced rates, no more than the local property tax is. It's funding that goes into the general pot to run a county, you know, and it's not enough to run a county either. We still have to get, obviously, central government top up. But you're saying that, I suppose, too, if you look at water rates as well, businesses are the only ones that pay those. Are you saying that, you know, the cost burdens to keep the lights on effectively, the businesses are having to do too much of the heavy lifting?
We really do believe that. And we've said this, even through Chambers Ireland, we say this, that the government needs to start looking at how local government is funded and funded correctly. You know, we have a population, we all know the pressures on this size of a county and also the size of a town. And, you know, how exactly is that funded? Why, you know, our councils need staff, they need people to do the work that we require of them. And I'm just not quite sure that the formula works at the moment.
I suppose the companies get to benefit from the infrastructure, you know, the increased power that's required, the increased water and sewage that's required, you know, the roads, the pavements to facilitate the footfall. I was going to say the public toilets, but I won't say that because I'm talking to someone from the Letterkenny Chamber, right? But I suppose that's the argument that could be made. But, you know, then what do the businesses give back that perhaps already justifies that support?
Yeah, so the businesses are providing the jobs, obviously providing the wealth. They're creating the income. And everybody wants to play their part. There's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, businesses aren't trying to shirk away from this. I suppose we're just saying that the timing's bad at the moment, and everything just seems to be on the up at the moment. So could the councillors look at it and maybe talk to us, hopefully get an 0% through this year, and then talk to us and see where we could...
Well, the problem is if we don't raise them for a number of years and then raise them sort of in a five-year cycle, you know, would it be more manageable, more palatable for businesses if they could factor in a 1% increase per year, for an example?
I suppose it's about certainty. You might be right. If you knew for the next 5 years that there was going to be a whatever increase and justified increases, now I don't mean just increase for the sake of it. Yes, possibly businesses can look at their cash flows and say, right, well, I know I have to factor that in. But we always get to this time in December and go, what's it going to be? You know, what are we talking about here? And then they have to work it out. There was also the revaluation done, I suppose, been done around the country. And for some, there was winners and losers in that. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's all about this feeling that you're always paying for things. And the other bit that we've said in our statement was out to our members was, we would love the council to explain in very plain English what exactly where the money goes. You know, which bit goes to...
Well, you see, it doesn't. It's not... It's
Well, Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you want that.
I know I'm living in my wee.
No, I know that. But the bottom line is you get the spending budget from the council, and it's the water and it's the lights and it's the roads. And I know what you're saying, but what specific is for business? Well, everything is for businesses. Well, everything is for me. I do know where you're coming from. But
I'll give you an example. So I'm obviously based in the north, so I pay rates, and I get a little leaflet out every year that tells me that certain amount goes to, percentage wise, goes to economic development, for example, and a percentage goes to capital projects. You know, so you look at all the like the regeneration work that's been done in County Donegal, you know, and that.
Well, I mean, you can break that down. I mean, I could break
that
down.
Yeah, but it'd just be interesting to see it.
You know, like, simply. I mean,
simply.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but just like major projects, our contribution versus the state's contribution and what's being spent where. I do understand where you're on about. But you could say, well, the road sweepers, for example, that is a percentage of it, right?
So, absolutely.
You know, it is the identifiable. But I do understand your wider point, because people want that for the LPT. You know, what am I getting for that? Why am I still paying to get my bins collected? It's not really how it works. It should work that way, but it ain't.
Yes.
The thing about it is,
we have to fund our council. Yeah. Like it has to be funded.
The thing about it is though, like you, what's also included in the budget, but not oft reported as front page stories, is businesses going into arrears on their rates, right? So they could owe suppliers, they could owe electricity companies, they could owe the council. It's an awful, awful lot. It is inevitable that we get to a point that this 5% takes some businesses out. That they look down and they look at the figures and they go, I might love doing this, but I don't want to be a busy fool and I have to think about my family and myself and all that kind of stuff. Is, in your view, a 5% rise, a rise significant enough that inevitably it will close business?
We are hearing a little bit of that. Now, I can only speak for the small, very small local businesses that we would talk to, say, you know, that are relying on footfall, for example. Yes. They are saying another increase could push them over the decide, I'm going to decide not to do this anymore. And now it's a whole mixture of things, you know, because your rent can go up.
It's the tipping point.
Yes, it can very easily. Now we've seen, you'll see a business on the main street closing after 52 years. Now that isn't just to do with rates or not, or just to do with costs.
It's an aggregate effect.
But it's very, you know, it's not what we want to see.
The problem we have is, though, the councillors can huff and puff, and I suppose no one wants to be seen as the person that decides on a measure that could put businesses out of business, right? But if they don't agree a budget by midnight tonight, then a budget is approved for them, and that is a very, very sticky wicket. And the councillors are on a sticky wicket, and we're going to have to find out who votes which way. Because that's going to be very interesting, and we're going to have to give that information tomorrow if a vote is agreed today, because it's very much in the public interest.
We have to get a budget, and we have to work with that, because if we get something imposed on us, it's going to be worse, probably. You imagine?
Yeah, but then again, you know, then it goes back. If something is cut so that this doesn't have to happen, you know, the business community will they look at themselves and go, well, I don't know. It's so complicated.
Greg, I would say something. I was thinking about this morning. You know, I remember during the, because I keep saying to people, I've been here a long time. So when we had the financial crash, I would have been sitting here with someone, not on Zoom today, but talking about how businesses were closing because of the financial crash. You know, we aren't there. But we have to invest in our communities. We have to invest in our town centres, and we need council to do that alongside government. So maybe we need our councillors to be lobbying government as well to say, let's work on this together. Let's make Donegal what we all love about it, and let's make Letterkenny a real haven spot.
The thing is if we're not doing that now, we are banjaxed when this economy cools down, and it does, because economies go in cycles. So if we aren't building infrastructure, resilience, sustainability now, we're going to be facing into another calamity. And that's why we need to think in 5, 10, 15 years' times, not annually. Okay, listen, very interesting conversation as always. Thank you very much indeed. Tony Forrester there, CEO of Letterkenny Chamber. What do you think? I'm very interested in businesses' perspectives on that as well, of course, because, you know, you are the guys that are going to end up having to foot that bill potentially. And as I say, we'll keep a strong eye on who votes where, who votes which way, because we've heard from Tony there, businesses will go under if this 5% increase in rates is passed at council today. But then again, the alternative is what happens if a budget is imposed. It's not simply black and white, like nothing is really.